go look at Hebrews 9, the end part of it. Focusing on the last verse, we're 27 to 28, but let's read starting at verse 23. Hebrews 9, 23. Thus it was necessary for the copies of the heavenly things to be purified with these rites, but the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these. For Christ has entered not into holy places made with hands, which are copies of the true things, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God on our behalf. Nor was it to offer himself repeatedly, as a high priest enters the holy places every year with blood not his own. For then he would have had to suffer repeatedly since the foundation of the world. But as it is, he has appeared once for all at the end of the ages to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. And just as it is appointed for man to die once, and after that comes judgment, so Christ, having been offered once to bear the sins of many, will appear a second time, not to deal with sin, but to save those who are eagerly waiting for him. So I'd like to look specifically at that last part. He's coming a second time, not to deal with our sin, but to... We said, save us. So, just two questions. Why do we eagerly await him, or why should we eagerly await him? He is our elder brother. More than that, he's our closest friend. Permanently fix us, fix us as a whole person in general. He will more specifically deliver us from this world of sin where we sin against one another, where our bodies are plagued through and through with the effects of the fall. And he'll also deliver us from this world of murder, hate, liars, and our own wicked hearts with his desires. He'll deliver us from the evil from outside of us and the evil inside of us. Do we find it hard, though, to wait for him eagerly? We do only because we're in such a fallen and cold state here in this world. The Holy Spirit has renewed our hearts, renewing in like the strict sense of the word, like we have a new heart from him. But we are still so much colder in our affections toward God and our heart towards him than we will be when we are there with him. We will be known we will then know just as we are fully known. So on that day we will love him so much more, and we'll be free from this dead flesh, this this cold and distracted heart of ours. It is cold because we don't respond to him like we ought. We ought to respond warmly and eagerly and earnestly to what he's appearing. We ought to just do our work day well, not looking directly to our boss, but looking to God. Love your neighbors perfectly with a lively hope, looking for his appearing, and keeping that in the front of our minds throughout every interaction that we do throughout the day. But instead we're cold, and we're also distracted. We in our distraction, we actually start to love the stuff of this world, physical things, present comforts that we have, depending on our stage in life. We love all of those more than Him, to our shame. We are cold, distracted, and we get discouraged. Discouraged with our lack of progress in the Christian life. Discouraged when we keep falling to a certain sin. Discouraged when we don't have the warmth that we should have, the warmth that we see even in previous ages, the warmth that we want to have towards God. And then so we come to this last verse, where we hear that Christ will not deal with our sin, but instead save those who are eagerly waiting for Him. And even there, with that end promise there, with that bit of encouragement, we can even our hearts can even accuse us, saying that we don't perfectly eagerly wait for Him enough. And so we can say back to our heart and the accuser of the brethren that, yes, I do sadly own that I don't love Christ like I should. I don't eagerly wait for Him like I should. But I am found in Him, and He will come again, not to deal with my sin, but to save me. Then we will be perfect, we will love Him perfectly, and we will be sin-free, but not until then.